Welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast, a podcast from the home of Scrum. In this podcast, we feature professional Scrum trainers and other Scrum practitioners sharing their stories and experiences to help learn from the experience of others. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello and welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast. I'm your host, Dave West, CEO here at Scrum.org. And today, I'm actually really excited about this podcast because we're talking to a couple of people that have really been heavily involved in using Scrum and Agile in an interesting context. We're fortunate to have two people on today's podcast. We've got Olga Ronanek, who's the Customer Operations Enterprise Lead from Shell. Everybody knows Shell, obviously. They probably go there frequently to put gasoline or petrol in the car. And we have John Coleman, PST from the UK, who worked with Olga on a really interesting engagement. Welcome to the podcast, Olga and John.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks very much for invitation.
Now, before we dig into the content, which we've got a lot to cover in 15, 20 minutes, is our listeners love to hear a little bit about you and where you're talking to us from. Olga, maybe you can start. Where are you calling us from today?
Well, actually, I'm calling you today from Krakow, which is based in Poland. And we've got the lovely and very sunny autumn afternoon here. So you're more than welcome to join me in Krakow in the time soon.
It's a great city for our listeners. We have a number of trainers in that area, so I've been fortunate enough to be there. And it is absolutely what you'd expect, medieval, but modern and really interesting. So thank you for taking the time on this autumn afternoon. And John, you're somewhere a lot less exciting than Krakow, right?
Indeed, yeah. I'm in the English countryside, about half an hour drive from Oxford. So that's not so bad, about an hour outside London. Thank you very much for having me today.
I know, awesome. Where the Thames begins, right? And it's not even called the Thames. So great. Well, thank you. All right. So Olga, let's start with you because I'd love to get some context for this story. You've had a pretty interesting and, dare I say, varied career at Shell. Shell's obviously a huge company. Tell us about your journey to your current position and some of the key moments over this journey.
Sure, I'm happy to. So before Shell, just so you know, I was studying different things. So studying languages, and I also studied to be a fashion designer, which didn't work out. I joined Shell 15 years ago, and the majority of it was in various customer operations roles, supporting different businesses. And I started at Shell with picking up phones from Austrian customers. Then I changed my role to being a team leader in various teams as well. Then I moved on to the operations manager when I managed the community of 70 plus people. And in the last years, I had a couple project roles that were individual contributor more type of roles, but I was focused kind of on more holistic project type of activities.
That sounds really interesting. And it's interesting you say your education wasn't software development and process and all this. It was very varied. And I actually think that, I mean, I think that makes it even more interesting, the journey you've gone through, because you've got a very different perspective than people like me and John. So we'll definitely be pulling on that later. And John, you know, where did you, just quickly for our audience, where did you sort of get to this position? What was your journey?
I was originally a project manager as well. I actually spent a bit of time in Shell as well. I had three engagements in Shell, but I was originally a traditional project manager. And towards the end of my project management days, I felt the plans were controlling me more than me kind of managing the plans. And I became probably one of the worst project managers in the world when changes came in. Life changes, business changes, bring it in, it's fine. I'll figure out a way to swap something else out, or I'll have a change request to get some more scope or whatever. But it was when a general manager of a factory in Ireland came to me one day saying, John, I need you to increase the capacity of the factory by 40%. And you got 4 months and no floor space. It was kind of like I knew I was in trouble then, because really small changes, because they had loads of continuous improvement projects and so on. small changes were taking 9 months. I had to change the whole factory in 4 months. So I kind of was in big trouble. So I actually went across to London, got trained by Ken, and went back to Ireland and upset everybody with Scrum for a while. That's how I got started with Scrum.
I know that that story is something that Ken still mentions occasionally, that he met you and you then went back and destroyed a factory. I mean, no, made a factory incredibly successful. All right, so let's talk about Shell and you know what you actually did. Olga, tell us a little bit about the problem space that you introduced Scrum and Agile into.
Yes. Well, you mentioned that everyone knows Shell from it's a gas station, right? So you just pull over, you just take gas, pay for it, and drive off happily. Well, there is much more than this. This is a very complicated and highly complex environment. It has loads of moving pieces. It also covers a lot of different lines of business. So there is also lubricants, there is also aviation, there is also marines, there is chemicals, you name it. So basically, we get almost everything. So it's not only Shell site. If you have so many businesses, you can imagine that we are also very used to work in various silos, and that is not the best environment if you decide you would like to get a holistic, kind of integrated look from the customer. If you add to this complex customer hierarchy, where you have data available for 3,500 unique accounts, 400 plus corporate, and 240 plus strategic accounts across multiple product lines and geographies. And all of this is scattered around 14 different systems. So if you try to pull this together, you can imagine it's not the easiest task.
No, it sounds incredibly complicated. So, and that really is the complexity that you and John worked on and solved in key accounts. You know, that was the challenge. Tell me a little bit more about sort of key accounts and what you were trying to fix with Agile and Scrum.
Well, actually, we call this part of the customers that we've been working with are the enterprise and the sectoral accounts. So it's a level up.
No.
It's a cream de la crème of the Shell customers, you can call them so. At this level, we prefer to call them even the business partners than the customers, because that's what they really are. We are no longer offering them simply products. So we are not just selling them something. We are rather cooperating with them on projects. And making some tailored solutions to their very specific needs. Sometimes when we are starting conversations with them, we don't really know what will be the answer for the problem statement, and we identify it jointly during our short time projects. Well, their expectations always is that we understand their business and their ways of working in a sense of a value chain and not just a simple product need. With this knowledge and also based on our experience as a company, we can propose options to improve their business and their customers' experience, because we are talking about companies that have their own customers. Of course, what they expect from us, that we will do all of this, being able to accommodate to them and not the other way around. And I'm not saying this, we always do a work like this, that we do whatever the customers ask us to do, but at least we need to keep this in mind. And we need to kind of give them something that will keep them satisfied. My role is focused on customer operations part, making sure that we are all able to look kind of holistically across lines of business with different ERPs inside. And those ERPs do not talk to each other. That makes it a little bit more difficult. And that our enterprise teams also have access to the insights that we have our systems, which makes them much more equipped for the further conversations with the customer.
Let me see if I get this. I mean, it's a really interesting use of Scrum and Agile, because ultimately your customer has, I'm going to use some Agile and Scrum terms, right? A clear product goal or a goal, right? And then you then incrementally deliver value against that goal, both proving that you understand that goal, you know, assumptions and what they said tomato, you said tomato, you know, those things get very clearly ironed out. And then obviously, incrementally delivering value requires you to work with multiple different ERPs and different teams and different lines of business to deliver this value to this really probably very big and very bureaucratic and quite complex company that you're providing services for. Is that really the essence of the situation?
Yes, I think
Awesome.
it's a very nice summary.
Gosh, I did sort of pay attention. So, John, talk to me a little bit about your perspective. This isn't a classical use of Agile and Scrum, right? I mean, it's a great use of it, but it doesn't seem very classical.
Indeed, it was one of my first challenges with companies like Shell, where often we go into other companies and things can only get better, and we use Scrum and things are do get better. But in companies like Shell, the project managers, there's a discipline, a whole discipline around project management in Shell. And in companies like that, they tend to be very good already at doing what they're doing. And so one of the things that you need to up your game on as a change agent is expectations management about what might happen once we start doing the change. How are we going to manage expectations about dates and maybe a bit later about uncertainty? But a really important thing that would be a concern in companies like Shell would be, how do we demonstrate compliance at pace? So how do we stop people being over concerned about information security risk, data privacy, data protection, finance, all these regulatory legal concerns? These are all things that need to be kept safe, basically. We need to make sure there are control rooms in companies like Shell, and we need to demonstrate compliance on a regular basis, on a month-by-month, sprint-by-sprint basis. And so figuring out how to do that can be a real challenge in companies like Shell.
So what you're sort of highlighting is that there's a lot of stakeholders that are not just the customer has a probably a every sprint a clear a clearer product, a goal, and then but unfortunately or fortunately to do this requires lots of stakeholders to be aligned, to be transparent with, and to work through that. That's really interesting. So obviously, you Olga, you were working before Scrum and Agile in this way. So, what were some of the challenges that this super complex environment demonstrated? What did Scrum and Agile help you to do or to solve?
I don't think I can give you a straightforward answer, as Scrum and Agile is used in Shell for a really long time already. And as part for this problem, for this particular problem, that was already a product, that we already had a product that tried to address this. And the problem was that when it was created, no one actually looked if it's serving its purpose, or is it can we actually develop it big enough to help us at a later stage? And the answer was obviously not. We understood that we need a bigger and more strategic solution, and something that we can incorporate much more businesses at a later stage. And this is what I was working with as a product owner. I kind of tried to patch something that we already has have some quick fixes to the strategic solution, and just enough for us to survive until the tactical version will be ready. Also, what I've noticed is that because historically we are used to more traditional ways of working, like kind of managing a project with a solution in mind, it's also very, very, very tempting to change back to how you to the ways how you used to do and how you used to deliver the projects. And before you noticed, you're stuck, or I was stuck with a very odd hybrid of the agile and the traditional project management. And you also need to remember that even if I was doing some Scrum, the whole organization was not. So I was kind of forced also to be in this nice hybrid. What I also think that before the agile becomes national, it is really important to pause every now and then and kind of take a sip of your tea and just check if what we do is really agile and Scrum, and have we unconsciously kind of moved to something very different.
That's interesting. John, what was your take on this journey?
Yeah, what I really noticed with Olga is the way she went right back to the essence of agility, really, about a group of people with various skills getting together to try and solve complex problems. And sometimes people forget about the essence, solving complex problems, being empirical, working together, trying to trust each other. following the Scrum values, things like that, or other values that are similar that help you to be in the spirit of agility. And I really observed that with Olga, that and also the way, for example, what I've seen in other companies as well, where you have to manage the expectations of many, many stakeholders. I noticed that there were some thinking styles and behavior styles that Olga was applying that gave me goosebumps, because, you know, these were things that I had managed to do really successfully in other companies before, and Olga was already doing some of these things. And so I was quite inspired by her level of agility. And when I come across people who are really living and breathing it, and sometimes they mightn't know everything that's in the Scrum Guide, but it's just so natural to them that it comes across in the way they're delivering. And if only we had more practitioners like that who really understand the, you know, what it's all about, you know.
I think that particularly, Olga, as you talked about this sort of, you know, complex environment in terms of the problem you were solving, but also the necessary complexity of working in a large organization, and they're not all doing Scrum and Agile, they're not all, you know, thinking in that way, but being able to focus on, hey, incremental progress, hey, cross-functional team, hey, trust, support, transparency, those principles, as you rightly said, John, are the essence of Scrum. We obviously put it in a nice little framework, but they're the essence. And I think that is, it's often challenging to do that. So it's really exciting to hear that. So how did you go about sort of like this implementation though? How did you, you know, what any obstacles, you know, working incrementally, which is a fundamental in a complex environment, sometimes is really hard to implement because you've got this, as you said, solution in mind, because that's how you've always done it. And everybody wants to work to that. And they actually don't want to see if progress can be made in a small chunk first. So tell me a little bit about the obstacles and where we, how we went about the change.
Of course. So as mentioned, the idea of Scrum is not new to Shell. What will give you a little bit of flavor, how it looks in the corporations and the big companies like this, is I was informed on one of the very formal meetings where we had a weekly catch-ups. I was simply informed that from now on, I'm a product owner. And at the same time, I was participating in those meetings because I was the main stakeholder and the recipient of this dashboard. So I kind of fluently transitioned from one role to another. I had some general training about Scrum, kind of I knew what the methodology is about, and I knew what roles I had, what was were they. I did a very basic research, what a product owner should do. So thank you very much, YouTube channels. And there I was in the middle of a very huge project with around 20 developers, Scrum Master and Project Manager on top of everything. I kind of used my vast experience as a manager and as a project lead, but I was trying to keep in mind what Scrum and Agile is about, and I was trying to kind of use my common sense to make it work. What I was trying to do is kind of listen and react to what team needs. I spent really long time talking with every single one of them and with them in groups, and I was asking a lot of questions, and I made sure that we are all on the same page, that we all are talking about the same things and our understanding is exactly the same. And looking at it from the 18 months perspective, I know what I could do differently and potentially better, but also at the same time, I know what I was, that I was really, really lucky that the team that I worked with was experienced and truly self-managed team. All the people there are knowledgeable, driven, and very curious, which is in essence a recipe for success. It can't go wrong. We were working hand in hand with the project manager to remove kind of all the obstacles from both the project and the organization perspective. And we made sure that people have all the necessary tools and skills to perform at their best. So if there is a Scrum heaven that John mentioned sometimes in his jokes, we would be very close with this team to it.
I would like to be there too. It's really interesting. Firstly, product owner is the hardest job. I just want to get it out there. So congratulations for surviving being a product owner. It isn't the easiest of jobs. You're sort of like everybody doesn't like you in a way. The team, because you keep bringing work, the stakeholders, because you're not doing exactly what they want, the customer, because, and so it's a really challenging role. So I applaud you for surviving and being successful in that. So John, as this sort of manifested, we talked a little bit about self-management, we talked a little bit about increments. Anything you would like to add to that?
Yeah, so one of the things as well that I notice in companies like Shell, that Olga reminded me of essentially when I was working with her, is that there are different types of product owner. You've got a scribe like a bad waiter in a restaurant who'll just take your order even if you're ordering the wrong food, you know. And you might have a proxy, someone who should be, someone else should be doing it, but they think that the product owner writes product backlog items all day, so they don't want to do that, and they misunderstand the product owner accountability. And then there's a business representative, which is where a lot of people would be, and Olga might be in that kind of situation where you have influence, you don't have the full mandate, you don't have the bag of money, if you like. You have a network of stakeholders that you can, I'm sure you can engineer a way to get there, but that does require a lot of influencing skills, and that's what I observed. How do you deal with that? You know, not just Olga, but lots of people out there who are what we call business representative type product owner. They're not the sponsor. They don't have the bag of money, or they don't have the full mandate from the organization, like someone like Elon Musk would have, for example, as an entrepreneur. But if you think about him, he would be a really high-end product owner, and so having those skills where you can buy a mandate for a few weeks at a time. And I've seen this in a few companies, not just Shell, other places as well, where if you don't actually have that full mandate, what you do is you go to your stakeholders. And I used to call it the speak now or forever keep your silence meeting, but speak now for the next 4 weeks, keep your silence meeting. You go to this maybe a review board, a steering committee, where there's kind of like unanimous decision making almost. And instead of asking for permission, you tell them what you're going to do, and then let them have an argument with you in that session about what you should do. And then just ask, you know, if you're going to change your mind, can you just hold off for 4 weeks because we need to refine this, whatever we agree on. And then they'll go into a sprint. And as soon as you undermine what the priorities are, the people doing the work, all the developers, they won't believe me anymore, and I'm not helping you, and you're not helping yourself. So how about do we do this? And I'm not saying that's what Olga was doing, but that's what I've seen in lots of companies like Shell, where if you are a business representative, that can be a very useful trick. Even if you don't have a mandate, if you don't have the bag of money, you're just buying enough, and every 2 weeks you go back and get another rolling 4 week mandate, and it kind of gives you the just enough mandate to keep you going. And I did pick up from Olga that she's got a few tricks in her toolbox as well, that are a bit different but similar, and I was quite impressed by how she did that.
Managing stakeholders, managing expectations, managing all of those stakeholders is an incredibly hard job. And I think all those years of experience in the different roles at Shell probably gave you a really good set of skills that you could, or tools, as you said, John, in your toolbox to do that, Olga. So impressed. Okay. What's next? We're coming to the end of our time together, unfortunately. But what's next from your perspective? I know, what's happening, going to happen next at Shell in your area, with the use of Scrum and Agile.
I think it's a really good question, and I think it's extremely difficult to move organizations like Shell to be fully agile, for various reasons. It is first the size and the complexity of the organization, number of people that we are talking about, also the experiences that they have, and sometimes the needs of the business simply. But I think the most important is what we are used to, because we tend to stick what we know and what worked for years. And Shell has years and years of experience of something that worked. So why would we abruptly change it, right? That might be also a very unpopular view, but I think that for certain type of projects or activities, well, the good old waterfall project management is a better fit. I think we just need to be very reasonable why we are trying to implement and which circumstances we are trying to implement something. But I also firmly believe that Agile has a lot to offer. So even if you don't utilize it 100%, you can always use this kind of approach. And as you mentioned, have this in your toolkit to ready to be used. Just to take it out, use it, and just put it back on the shelf if you don't use it. You can use those bits and pieces to accommodate your day-to-day work and the day how you generally work. And maybe I'm just saying this because during my PSPO training, I kind of understood that I am an agile leader, even if I haven't realized it yet, that my habits and the ways of working are very similar to the agile leadership, and I use it naturally and very instinctively. And multiple feedbacks that I got let me believe that I am a good leader.
Yeah, I think that the essence of Scrum is hard to teach, or the essence of Agile is hard to teach, but some people have kind of got it. You know, they're good working with stakeholders. They're good breaking down problems into progressable chunks. They're good at encouraging a direction that everybody rallies behind. And I think that's what we heard from your perspective at Shell. And then the future continually adding those skills to you and challenging yourself. I also said, I loved, Olga, what you said about sitting down with a cup of tea once in a while. Obviously, I love tea, being English, and stepping back and going, hey, am I approaching this right? Is this the right way? Maybe I should be looking at this a little differently. And I think that's great. And having somebody like John can really help. All right. So we've got lots of people listening today. Maybe some of them are working in similar situations, maybe even in Shell, because it's such a huge organization, right? So you might get some internal emails, hopefully, on this. But if you're in a similar position, and you know, before all of this began, what would you tell that the you that's like in the past, as it were? You know, if they're in that position, what would you tell them? What was the first or the, you know, most important thing they should concentrate on?
So I would start with simple, please don't panic. And I'm sure there are plenty of people in your organization that are willing to support you and help you at the beginning of your journey. So don't be afraid, simply just to ask for guidance. There are a couple of ground rules that I usually set up for myself, and maybe they will be helpful for you guys as well. The ones that helped me is, first and foremost, ask questions and be genuinely curious. People can feel if you are genuine, and they can feel if you are curious. And also explain why you ask. Don't be impatient, both with your speaker and with yourself, and give yourself time. If you don't know something, that's perfectly fine. Just admit it. But do not treat this as an excuse. Let people know what you plan to do with this information, and also so they will know what they can expect from you, and also by when. That helps in the further conversation, and that also helps to build trust. What personally is for me super important, if there is a decision to be made, just make the decision. Don't stall while making decisions. Make it as clear as possible why you decided like this as well. That also helps. And please remember that you made the best possible decision at the time with the available set of information based on your experience. And yes, it may turn out with the time that it was not the best one. Well, it happened to all of us. So go back, review, and adjust. Well, I would say it is simple as that. But always own your decisions. And something that I always keep in the back of my mind, I cannot read people's minds, so don't expect them to have the same ability. And as a leader, when I start to build any new relationship, either with a team, a stakeholder, or a project team, I say it very openly, guys, I have a lot of skills. I can't read your mind. That's not one of the skills that I have. That might sound a little bit odd, but I'm also saying that until you tell me something, I will not know it. Well, I can assume, I can think I know, I can guess, but if there is anything that you would like me to do, you need to say it out loud. And I think that's it.
Wow, that is a checklist for being a product owner, really, isn't it? Remember to be curious, always explain why, be transparent, don't get impatient, give yourself time, admit you don't know something, so be vulnerable when necessary, because that builds trust as well as actually gets the answers that you're interested in. Make sure you know, make decisions, but make them transparent, and that this is why you made that. Because I think that's really important. Don't stall in that process and make the information available so that everybody, knows why you're making this decision, and to highlight the fact that you don't read minds, even though everybody would love that if you could, because that's how often organizations work, right? What? You didn't know that? Well, how would I know that? Well, we just thought you would. I love that expression. That's awesome, Olga. Awesome. John, what have you got? What's your sort of like, if you're in Olga's position 5 years ago, 3 years ago, what would you give advice?
I love what Olga said, but I would also say maybe have a look at the Kanban guide for Scrum teams, because if you're doing Scrum really well, you can add rocket fuel to it metaphorically by adding Kanban, make it go much faster. And if you want to make sure the rocket's kind of pointing in the right direction, maybe think about doing Lean UX with it as well. There's a lovely Scrum with UX class at scrum.org as well, where you can look at those ideas in your product backlog, and maybe we're not confident we can harvest the value with a lot of them. And so we can save a lot of money by not even putting them into the system in the first place. We can find out through cheap experiments which ideas are really worth pursuing, and then turn on the quality switch with Scrum and deliver really high quality, high valuable product. So that'd be my two tips, Dave.
They're awesome tips. I love that. I obviously, when I met Jeff and Josh, the authors of Lean UX and the authors of the class that you mentioned, they kind of blew my mind and made me go back and instantly change my backlog, which I still sometimes get jibbed on, because it was such a major change of my view of the world about what value really is and how do you get there faster. Which is really cool. So thank you, Olga, John. Thank you for spending the time on this autumn day from Poland and from England, and myself speaking to you from Boston, Massachusetts, in the United States. Thank you for taking the time. I think our listeners definitely will get a lot out of this, and I certainly did. It actually, interestingly, Olga, made me sort of like smile again. There's so many times I reach organizations that are the size of Shell, and it's just this list of impossibilities. And fair enough, they're an incredibly successful organizations, and I get it. They've evolved these systems and processes over time. But at the end of the day, I think the art of the possible, you've made me realize that you can do stuff, and it just requires a little bit of leadership and a little bit of the agility, and good things happen. So thank you for making me smile. I really do appreciate it. Okay, so that was it. Today we heard Olga and John talking about their journey at Shell, working with these key accounts, a highly complex environment. You heard about how to, stakeholders. You heard really the essence of Scrum is so important, and how you can incrementally get a mandate for change if you're smart about it. So thanks for listening. Thanks for spending the time out of your day. Hopefully you'll join me for other podcasts, and Scrum on.